You're listening to Daily Paul Radio. Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. WGRR Digital.
So welcome to this, the first ever Blue Republican radio show. I'm very grateful to have been given this platform by the Daily Paul to speak to you all at this time of huge cultural and political change, introduce you to, I hope, some great guests and share some important ideas that I hope will ultimately help the liberty movement care a little bit less about winning arguments and a little bit more about winning supporters. And I guess if you're listening to this, you may already know what Blue Republican means and what the movement stands for. And if you don't, you will no doubt find out if you listen to the next five or six shows. So rather than bore you by spending an hour telling you all about this movement and how it started, I thought I would do something much more interesting and introduce you all to a man who I am going to call a friend of mine, even though I have never met him. The whole Blue Republican thing started off with an article that I wrote in the Huffington Post called If You Love Peace, Become a Blue Republican Just for a Year. And the gentleman you're about to hear from read that article, but it turned out that he was already had done quite a bit of the work that I was trying to do with that article. Cornelius, thanks for being here with me.
Good to be with you, Robin.
Now, I would just like to hand over to you, and I invite you to explain to the listeners of this first Blue Republican radio show what I'm talking about.
Yes. Well, Robin, I'm glad to be called your friend and hope that I could call you friend as well. We've talked on a number of occasions, and you and I have discussed how, though we have different perspectives on politics, economics, and such, we can find some common ground. And that common ground is very much needed in our day and time. I have been, for pretty much all of my life, up until this last presidential election, a Democrat. My great-grandfather sat me on his knee and told me about Mr. Roosevelt.
Mm-hmm.
So being in from Eastern North Carolina, that's sort of inherited too. But I consider myself a progressive Democrat most of my life, and voted for Barack Obama in 2008. And felt that he was going to be a pragmatic, progressive president. And to my great disappointment, he turns out to be another corporatist, very much in line with George W. Bush and mm-hmm. Bill Clinton before him. I felt like that maybe what needed to be done is that we needed to shake up the political establishment, try to crack some holes in the corporate duopoly and maybe try to talk about principles and forming different kinds of coalitions. And so I began to kind of write about this principally on a blog called Progressives for Ron Paul. And then your article came out, and I was impressed with that and intrigued with where you were coming from, and wanted to see if we could work together. And, you know, the rest is history, as they say.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. And I think you were one of the first kind of people to read that article and on the Huffington Post, and I think maybe get in touch with me. I found a piece that you wrote on your blog referencing the article. That might have been how it happened. Is that right?
I think that is right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So you've been in this fight for quite a while. And certainly the argument that I was making, and I think it's obviously similar to the one that you were making, is there are a lot of people, liberals, who voted on good liberal principles against Bush's Republicans because they thought they were voting against crony corporatism for peace and for civil rights and the Bill of Rights. And then when I wrote that article, the Blue Republican article in 2011, I was saying, you know, we've had chance to see what Obama really is, and he's more of a Bush, you know, third term of Bush. And so I was inviting those independents and those who identify liberal to stay true to their liberal principles, not to throw them away, but to stay true to them by backing this old white conservative Republican guy.
As and a Southerner at that.
Say again?
And a Southerner at that.
Well, that's not so bad.
No.
Now, one of the reasons I wanted you on the first show is that the Blue Republican movement has become, I call us a non-dogmatic movement for the liberty curious. And, of course, like you, I'm all about finding common ground, winning supporters rather than arguments. I kind of feel that the principles that are worth having are the ones that you can turn into practical reality rather than, you know, used to win kind of purism contests. And I noticed that you also have a very pragmatic, strategic view of basically getting the job done, getting our country back. Is that fair?
Yes, it is, very much so. I think, you know, common ground and building on that common ground, we've got to do it or else we will continue as we are, and it looks like it's getting worse.
Right. And because I'm about that kind of big tent liberty, I wanted you on the show because, in a way, you are the left flank of Blue Republican, aren't you?
I think I probably am, just having dialogue with you and other Blue Republicans.
Right. And I'm certainly not the right flank, but I know there are those out to the right of me who would be that right flank.
Yes, there are.
So, but between you and I feel like we have this conversation, I don't have to convince people about what Blue Republican is about. Perhaps if we discuss some issues, we could show people, you know, the amount of ground that perhaps we can cover.
Sure.
So now, you've been writing that blog, you're writing that Progressives for Ron Paul blog for quite a while. When did you start that?
I began sometime in early 2011.
Okay.
And actually, I have not written on that blog since a little after the end of the election, I think January or mm-hmm. or February after the election. So I was on there, I think for a good year or so, year and a half. I can't remember exactly when it started, but.
And did you get many responses to the kind of things that you were saying there in early 2011?
It depends on what you mean by many. Probably not as many as you did, but I did get, several. Let's see, I can't remember how many thousand
sure.
hits, but I got a lot of responses.
And what were their flavor?
Well, it was mixed. There were people who were favorable, people who thought I was out of my mind, and people who thought that we can't cooperate with progressives and we can't cooperate with libertarians. You know,
okay.
We're night and day, and so there was a whole spectrum of responses to what I was saying, and I think that overall I felt positive about what I was doing. It was something that I enjoyed doing as well. And, I believe in what I wrote.
Yeah, absolutely. Was that the first time you'd got kind of that engaged in politics, or have you always been kind of that engaged in politics?
Well, I try to be engaged as much as possible and I vote and try to research. I think this is probably the most publicly involved I've ever been. I think it's important to be politically engaged.
And now you've really thrown yourself in by becoming the chair of Blue Republican North Carolina.
Yes, I'm proud to be that chair.
And you're glutton for punishment.
Yeah, well, I think it's going to be a challenge. And what I like about the idea of Blue Republican is that we are an evolving organization and an open organization that is trying to reach out across the political spectrum. And you know, the news here in North Carolina is that we are in almost a civil war and in the politics of this state. And I think that we need some sane voices in this state to talk about, hey, this corporate way of doing things is not working. We need to come up with some different strategies for dealing with where we're at.
And are you seeing increasingly a sympathy for that view from all over the political spectrum in your neck of the woods?
Well, I think that there's definitely a desire.
Oh, Cornelius, hold your thought because we're about to go off to a commercial break.
Sure.
So you can answer that one for me maybe when we get back.
Okay.
All right. Thanks a lot. Welcome back. So here I am talking to Cornelius Brantley, and I think I just asked you before we went to that break about the reception that the message that you're promoting down there in North Carolina is getting across the political spectrum. And you used the word anti-corporate, but obviously for me, and I you can tell me how you feel about this, but The problem we're facing is large corporate-state axis. We've got this kind of mutual benefit thing going on between big corporations and the big state. And I'm perceiving that there is a breakdown in kind of the left versus right paradigm as more and more people, especially younger Americans, kind of get to see that it's not either or. There's a kind of a both-and problem in American politics.
Yes, I agree with you, Robin. And just a little personal anecdote. My father and I'm named for my father. He's Cornelius Sr. He and I have rarely seen eye to eye on a number of topics, subjects, and issues and politics. And yet, in this past election, we were on the same page in regards to Ron Paul. Not that I supported everything that Ron Paul endorsed, although my father was probably a stronger Ron Paul supporter than I was. He got to a point where he saw that the Republican Party and George Bush had betrayed American trust and he felt like that he was deceived about Iraq and that what we were doing in terms of big government and big business, big labor, was a disaster. And I have to agree with him. I love my dad, but I don't like agreeing with him all the time. But we agree on this. And I think in general, you find that people are saying, hey, Bush ruined it, and now Obama is making it worse in some instances, and he's certainly not getting us out of it. The jobs that are being created, so to speak, are just the temporary jobs and minimum wage jobs. Not that we don't treasure any kind of job, but the whole problem is what you're talking about, this alliance of the state and large multinational corporations. And unfortunately, from my perspective, big unions who are largely corporatized and top-heavy and unresponsive to ordinary working people. I think there's a receptivity in this frustration from the negative perspective, but also, and I think this is, you have to dig to see this, I think there is an emerging consensus, or at least I hope we're moving in that direction. And you see it within, say, the Green Party, where they are stressing more and more localism and local initiative and local government and that sort of thing, which harmonizes, I think, in many ways with the libertarian perspective on decentralization of authority. And also you see this, I think, in the emerging consensus that the United States of America does not need to be the policeman of the world, and that it's in many ways contrary to our national interest and peace and citizens' diplomacy and trade, open trade, are good for our foreign policy. So I see that there's an emerging consensus of decentralization, localism, empowering the individual, and making room for this by backing off of our empire building and maintenance.
Now, you say consensus. That word implies at least a majority, but surely we are still very much in a minority, fast growing, admittedly. But we've still got, I mean, we're not at consensus. We're working against the established consensus, aren't we?
Yes, I think that would be more accurate to say. That's why I say emerging, and I'm probably overly optimistic in that response, in that regard.
Now, what you're talking about and what, you know, we are pushing for, I guess, as blue Republicans, and, you know, we are, Seal says, principle before party, peace, liberty, the Constitution. Most people would say that these ideas are getting the greatest traction right now, if we're looking at the main parties, within the Republican Party, where you have the likes of Amash and Rand Paul, etc. And certainly, although I don't think the Libertarian Party can say they did well with their 1% for Gary Johnson, there's certainly a reinvigoration of the LP as well. This rising tide toward liberty and pushing power back down to individuals, are you seeing that? Do you feel you see that there in North Carolina across the board, or do you see it concentrated in these kind of parts of the political spectrum? You know, certain Republicans, the Libertarian Party. It sounds like you're identifying the Greens. But what about the Democrats? You say you're coming from the Democrats. You were a Democrat. Now, you still identify progressive. Do you identify Democrat? And what does it mean to identify progressive if you hold the views that you hold?
Well, at this point in time, I'm registered Republican. I don't know how much longer I'll be a registered Republican. I do continue to identify myself as a progressive. That word, like so many other words, has a multiplicity of meanings. And so, but I basically identify with the idea that that the mixed economy and the empowered individual work best, and that limited government works best when there is a respect for the individual and a respect for democracy. Now, I'm sure that doesn't quite jive with a lot of what libertarianism is about. But I think that there are, you know, here in North Carolina, yes, there are Republicans and libertarians who are strongly moving in that direction. And I think the Democrats are kind of just in a way playing defense because they're completely out of power right now. And yet there's a these Moral Monday protests in Raleigh that are, I think, maybe fermenting some enthusiasm for liberty and justice for all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think is at the heart of what I believe. I believe in liberty and justice for all. That's what a progressive should believe in.
Now, you know what, Cornelius? That's really interesting because I was sitting in a meeting not very long ago with up here in Washington State. I'm in Seattle, as you know, with some Libertarian Party candidates and soon-to-be candidates. And we were doing some brainstorm on Libertarian Party marketing, and we circled around a lot of slogans and a lot of words and a lot of vocabulary, and we came all the way back to liberty and justice for all as the best motto for what practical libertarianism is. And you've just given it to me as the motto of progressives.
Yes, isn't that strange?
Times must be a-changing.
Yeah, yeah.
This is kind of to our point, isn't it?
Yes, I think so. And you know, if I look at where the Democratic Party is and I look at where the Republican Party is, I have more in common as a progressive, green, peace-loving Democrat.
Okay, hold on. Stop right there, Cornelius, and carry on after our next break. Thank you.
Sure.
You're listening to Daily Paul Radio, revolutionary talk for revolutionary times, WGRR Digital.
So welcome back to the first ever Blue Republican radio show with me, Robin Kerner, and I'm speaking to the chair of Blue Republican North Carolina, Cornelius Brantley Jr. Cornelius, once again I interrupted you, and I think we were beginning to talk about the convergence in some ways between, let's call it principled progressivism and libertarianism.
Yes, and I was saying that when I look at the two major parties, I, as a peace-loving, green progressive, have more in common politically with libertarians and libertarian Republicans than I do with a great deal of those corporate Democrats and corporate Republicans. And I think, you know, I look at the military-industrial catastrophe, and I think, you know, we have blown it here, both parties, and resources, human resources, human beings are being wasted, and so many trillions of dollars thrown away when that money could be used for something different. And I far more like that money to be put in the private sector than into the military-industrial complex. You know, so I think there's a huge difference between ordinary people and what we believe is principled and right and good for all, and what liberty and justice for all means, and what the corporate parties are doing to us.
Yeah, yeah. How do you think, why do you think you got into this state? What is it that has caused, at this point in American history, this convergence between the two main parties in favor of the military-industrial complex, and you know, at the expense of, you might say, individual prosperity and liberty.
Yes, and I would add at the expense of community justice and progress as well. And I think that from the progressive and democratic perspective, we rightly trusted our federal government because of civil rights. We were on the right side of history, and the federal government needed to intervene. Now, there are a lot of my friends who would disagree with me, and my father would disagree with me on that, and I think Ron Paul might even disagree to a certain extent on that. But I think we were right about that. But we have got to see that the federal government is no longer about civil rights and civil liberties. Certainly, as we look at what's happening with the NSA, we can see that. And the economic policies are not for the people, they're for the corporations. And
is that because it's the corporations that are putting up the big money that get politicians into power? Is that what it comes down to, or is there something else?
I think that that's a big part of it. I also think that these corporate folks are not all bad, and they're very good at manipulating people. And so we've kind of bought into, you know, hey, Obama here, he's on our side, or Bush, he's on our side, and you know, we've bought into this kind of bait and switch cultural wars that are undermining the real debates as well as the real agreements that we should be having.
And the damage is all the greater, would you say, because the government, the state, has aggregated to itself so much power, more power than it was ever meant to have, that so much is in their gift when they sit down with some of these corporate lobbyists and write the rules.
Yes, I would say that basically the what goes on in Washington is basically that the politicians are bought and paid for, and they write the rules.
Hold that thought, and we will continue this in the last segment in a few minutes. Thanks, Cornelius.
Sure.
Welcome back to The Blue Republican with Robin Koerner, and when I left you all at the end of the last segment, Cornelius and I were talking about what happens when big money sits down at the table with big state power. Cornelius.
Yes, Robin, and I think it's the principal problem we have, and when big corporate money and power sit down with the federal government, politicians and such, basically what happens is that ordinary people get completely left out of the equation, and we are seen as, I guess, just obstacles in the way of whatever interest they have.
Yeah. Now, obviously, this is something that I write a lot about, this kind of the corporate state axis that we mentioned earlier. And obviously, a lot of libertarians listening to this are bristling because they're thinking, and certainly I as a constitutionalist would agree with them, that one perhaps best solution is to chain back down the government so that it no longer goes so far beyond the bounds of the Constitution, so that so much less is within its gift. And then there's so much less of an incentive for big money to buy the benefits that big power can give.
Well, I think there's certainly an argument to be made from that perspective, and I would probably agree with what you're saying there. The Constitution needs to be respected. Ron Paul's best friend, or one of his best friends in Congress, was Dennis Kucinich, and they both carried the Constitution around in their pockets. And I think that they probably saw eye to eye on most constitutional issues. And certainly the government needs to be pulled back from this disaster in regards to civil liberties and basic rights, because the government has overstepped its bounds by spying on American citizens, clearly violating big principles within the Constitution. And like I said earlier, I think that regardless of whether or not the federal government has in the past been positive or negative in economic policy, at this point in our history, the federal government has very little interest in taking care of the needs of ordinary people. I say that not in the paternalistic sense. I say that in terms of empowering people to take care of themselves. And I think that, we need to get back more to empowering individuals and local governments to do the justice that we need in this country.
Now, when you say that, do you feel like a progressive? Because that's certainly something that a lot of libertarians would say, feeling quite libertarian.
Well, again, terminology here and nomenclature aside, I think that a progressive should be concerned about the empowerment of individuals and families and communities. And certainly the federal level has something to do with that, but the decision-making process needs to be with the individuals, with local communities. And the Green Party says this, as well as the Libertarian Party. And I think that's a big common ground that we need to explore and expand.
Now, when you talk about the need for decisions to be made closer to the individual, I mean, that means further from a centralized state. So if you as a progressive are looking at politics in that way, that sounds like something of a redefinition of progressivism, because for those who don't identify as progressives, we see progressivism with a capital P as generally implemented as one size fits all statist policy.
Well, I understand that perspective, and in many ways it's accurate. I can just speak for myself that I don't believe in one size fits all central government, central planning of the economy. I do believe that there is a role for the federal government. And I do think that there are some things that uniformity is a benefit for. Or else we have economic musical chairs where local governments are pitted against one another. And it's the lowest common denominator rush to the bottom type of economics. So I think there's some common ground in common infrastructure of the economy that the federal government does have a role in. But, let's put decision making back at the local level. It may need some transition time in terms of how we transition from federal funding to local funding. And I think that's an issue that we can explore as well, is how do we fund this and how do we move basically, how do we move revenue out of Washington and back toward state, local, and individual? And I think that the ultimate goal of libertarianism is to get it into the pockets of the individual. And certainly that's what I'm ultimately wanting to.
Do you think it's that, you know, that would be kind of a feasible shift in political direction for the left, for the Democrats? Or would there just be an instinctive fear of change when it comes to, say, applying the principle of, you know, they call this subsidiarity in Europe, right? Moving the power, the money back down towards where it should be exercised and spent. Would a lot of the left just be scared that if we do that, then the welfare, there wouldn't be any welfare, that there wouldn't be any safety?
Yeah, I think there is fear of that, and I think that there are maybe some good reasons for fearing that, but I think that you look at the balance of what the federal government is doing for economic reasons. The balance is not for empowering individuals, not for helping families, not for creating the infrastructure that citizens need to do business, and really, it's not happening. So I think that there probably would and is resistance to that idea, but I don't think it's a hopeless cause, because I see that there are people on the left, and the Green Party is probably at the forefront of this, who are saying, look, move the money out of Washington back to the local level, let local people make local decisions about how to use it, and eventually let's find a way that local people can find their own funding as well.
Is this a kind of a modernizing of the left, would you say? Is this a change?
Well, I can't, like, again, I can only speak for myself, but I do see that there are people who are advocating, you know, such like location value taxation, which I think is, you know, something that libertarians can look at closely, and it doesn't, in my mind, deviate from libertarian principles. It's simply saying, what is created socially and naturally, you need to have a user fee for it. And I think that we can incentivize that kind of taxation system.
Yeah, that was such an interesting one, because I mean, we're getting into Georgism and all those things here, and I would love to do one or more shows on that as well. The issue of land and land resources and the application of libertarian principles to the ownership of land is actually a very complex one. And I do think it's an area where we could be finding perhaps more common ground than we've found. But it's a big, complex issue, and we're going to another break. So we'll leave that for another show. And we'll come back to a little goodbye in a few minutes. So thank you for staying with us for this, the first Blue Republican radio show, with me, Robin Kerner, and Cornelius Brantley. And in the end of the last segment there, we just really opened a can of worms where when you raised the land value tax, Cornelius, which I think will be a good topic for an entire show or seven in the future. But we only have about 90 seconds now, so I just want to ask you, Cornelius, what do you think we need to be doing? And when I say we, I mean anybody who cares about peace, liberty, the Constitution, the end of crony corporatism. What do we need to do to get out of our own way so that we can come together across traditional political boundaries, perhaps, and unite for these principles?
Well, I think we need to see that we need to see that these principles are big and foundational, and we hold them in common. We want and we need liberty and justice for all, and that is endangered gravely today, and it's an urgent need. And we may not walk together forever, but this part of the journey we need to walk together and lay aside our sectarian and self-righteous ways and see, be open. Be communicating, be creative. There's common ground, and we can find it and we can build upon it, and we can overcome this corporate cronyism, this warmongering, this imperialism that is ruining our nation and our world. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to get out of our own way and get together to do liberty and justice for all.
Yeah, and I don't think there's really anybody anywhere on the political spectrum should have much objection about taking down the NDAA, dealing with the Patriot Act, stopping killing innocent children all over the world, etc., etc. We've got an awful lot of work we can do together before we start arguing about what we can't do together.
Yes, I'm 100% with you there.
Thank you so much, Cornelius. And that's just as well, considering that you're the chair of one of the Blue Republican chapters, one of the first Blue Republican chapters. And I look forward to doing this again with you before very long. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Robin. It's been a great privilege.